Greetings from the Yeshiva Gedoyla Beis Yisrael for a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. The night before the departure from Mitzrayim was the most memorable night in history. The Bnei Yisrael shut themselves up in their homes and did not venture forth all night. Together, each family ate the Korban Pesach with the matzahs and morah, their loins girded up and their staffs in their hands in readiness to depart. And when the terrible cry arose throughout the land from their Egyptian neighbors, as the dread presence wended its way across the land and struck dead every firstborn, father and son, the Israelites listened in hushed awe as the destroyer passed over their houses and left them unharmed. Outside, death rode in the sky, but in the humble habitations of Yisrael, the first Seder was being celebrated. The passing over as the Pesach of the houses of Yisrael was a portent of the process of history. The destruction of time was to overwhelm nation after nation, but Yisrael and its eternal faith would survive and endure forever. The thrill of that historic night set on fire the blood of Israel forever, to be re-experienced on that same night year after year throughout all the ages. The Pesach Seder became the Kodesh HaKodoshim in the Jewish family life. The father is transformed into a high priest, and the family table becomes a Beis HaMikdash. Under the enchanting spell of age-old procedures, the history of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's election of Yisrael and the release by him from bondage is reenacted in a manner which leaves a never-to-be-forgotten impression on the hearts of the participants. Here, the links are forged in the chain of tradition as the deathless ideals of Hashem's Torah are transmitted on this fateful night from father to son. Above all scenes in Jewish life, the Seder has been extolled by poets and painters in song and picture. There's a Mishnah in Masechta Pesachim which states that three things we are obligated to say Pesach night: Pesach, Matzah, Morah. The subject of the going out of Mitzrayim is so big that the Torah stands upon it. It's a foundation for the entire world aspect of the Jewish nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, when he spoke at Sinai, began with these words: Anochi Hashem Elokecho Asher Hoseisicho Me'eretz Mitzrayim, who took you out of Egypt. However, when there are very many details, when the panorama is so big, it's possible for a person to get lost. Therefore, they narrowed it down, they focused our attention on three main principles: Pesach, Matzah, and Morah, which contain the most important aspects of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now we're going to study this subject on two levels. First, on a national level, the way it is usually understood. Pesach refers to the Korban Pesach, to the offering of the Pesach. First, the name. What's the significance of the name? And Pesach means the skipping over, or the passing over, which means that when the destroyer was let loose in Mitzrayim, and his function was to destroy, yet he passed over all the houses of the Bnei Yisrael. Their homes were safe from the destroyer. That in itself is an occasion for thanksgiving. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for that alone, even without any further significance. We're grateful that a great part of our people was preserved. However, it means much more, because it has a permanent significance, which means in all the generations, as the destroyer comes eventually to all the nations and cuts them down, every nation eventually goes underground, is not a nation of antiquity that survived except the Am Yisrael. As the destroyer passes over all the peoples, he is going to pass over the Am Yisrael. Forever and ever, there's going to be a Jewish people. That's a very important principle of Pesach, although it doesn't exhaust the subject. Important for every Jew, when he thinks about Pesach or mentions it, to remember the meaning of the word. And the word means literally that we are going to be left over. That's the plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it will be fulfilled forever and ever till the end of time. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is forever, and his people are also forever. That's what Pesach says. If you're not convinced that the nations of the world went under, all you need is to take a book of ancient history and see in the table of contents the names of the nations and ask, where are they? You might say Persia is still around. Persia is not around. Persia was destroyed, lost all its power, and stopped being a Persia long before the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash. The fact is, at the beginning of the era of the Second Sanctuary, the nation of Persia went out of existence. It was taken over by others. It became the Parthians, no longer the Persians. And all the Persian ideology, all its national pride, everything, finally went underground. And if you want to look for the grandeur of ancient Persia, You won't see it today. You have to use bulldozers, excavators. Rome? Not today. What Rome once was, the Roman people went out of existence, even physically, because they were overwhelmed by a torrent, a flood of invading nations who settled there, and everything that meant Rome went lost. So, if you wish, convince yourself by looking in the past, and you'll see that the destroyer did not spare anybody. And don't think that he's going to spare England or Russia or the United States. All the nations eventually will have to suffer the same fate. Is Russia the Russia that it was under the Tsars? The Tsars surely won't say so. For so many centuries, Russia was a monarchy. It was ruled by a family of kings. It had its established church. And then everything was overthrown. In one short period, everything changed. Russia is nothing today that like it was once, except the language. However, the Am Yisrael is given a covenant, and that is Pesach, that is going to be forever. Its language is forever, and all of its ways are forever. Its Torah is forever. The Jews that keep Shabbos today are exactly the same Jews as those who kept it when the Torah was given, and that's how it's going to be down to the end of time. All the attitudes of Judaism, all the practices, won't be any changes, any dispensations. From Rome, there constantly come forth changes. Sometimes it's hard to press a change out of the Vatican. But they do change. They've changed tremendously throughout the centuries. But the Am Yisrael will remain the same. That's Pesach. However, we'll find another significance, no less important. And that's the great teaching of Pesach that emphasizes the election of the Am Yisrael. Pesach marked the inception, the initiation, the beginning of a new era in the world's history. And that's the choice of a chosen people. Now let's not underestimate this principle of the greatest importance to understand what took place then. From the beginning of mankind's history, from the beginning of the world, men offered sacrifices. Odom, Cain, and Hevel, that's written openly in the Torah, brought offerings. Noah brought offerings. Everybody understood that this was a form of expressing their devotion to the Creator by bringing him offerings. But all these offerings throughout the history of man were oiless, were burnt offerings. They were burnt on an altar, and the smoke that carried heavenward the products of combustion was considered as a gift or as a sign of devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one ever thought, it ever occurred to anyone, that he should eat an offering. That was out of the question. it would have been a sacrilege to imagine such an occurrence, that someone should take what is dedicated to the service of the Creator and he should profane it by putting it into his mouth. It was out of the question. Never had it ever happened. And none of the korbanos mentioned in our history in the Torah was such a thing mentioned, even once. And now came the Pesach. The Pesach changed the entire picture. It was the first offering that men dared to eat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu insisted that this should be eaten. The ochlu es ha-bosa, they must eat it. Achilas psochim, it's a mitzvah, it's a command to eat the korban pesach, not to burn it on an altar. Eating of the korban pesach was a spectacular novelty. It was astonishing even to the Am Yisrael. But there it was. And we have to understand the significance what the Pesach meant. And so when Pesach night, when we're going to say these three important words, Pesach, the first one, we already mentioned Pesach means that we are going to be preserved forever. The destroyer will pass over us and leave us. We're going to remain forever. But now we're starting another significance. Pesach means that the body of a Jew is declared holy by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every Jewish body is now elevated to the status of an altar. And instead of burning the offering on the fire of a Mizbeach, it was consumed in the body of an Israelite. They ate the Korban Pesach. Now it is difficult for us to gauge the greatness of this principle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu declared that every Jew is a holy altar. And his consumption of the offering is the same as the fire on the Mizbeach consumes a korban to Hashem. Now we have to live up to that ideal. It takes a great deal of meditation to begin appreciating this teaching. But that is what we should have in mind when we say Pesach. And the fact is, the Gemara points this out as a reason why the nations of Canaan were driven out to make place for the Am Yisrael. It's a queer statement. It states as follows: Uri Sofon Uvoi Simon, awake you people of the north, and come those of the south. Who are the people of the north? All the nations of the earth. Because they bring a korban which is slaughtered only on the north of the Mizbeach. The korban oilo, the burnt offering, is only al Sofena Mizbeach, the north of the Mizbeach. So all the nations are called north. Isn't that a queer statement? Just because of this one detail, all the nations of the world are called north. Uri Tzofen. So bestir yourselves, you nations of the north. That's all you have, a korban oila, a burnt offering. Uvoi Simon, and come, you people of the south, means the Am Yisrael, because they have a new kind of an offering that you can slaughter even on the south or any side of the altar. Because Shlomim, Korban Pesach, don't require north. And Oilo must be slaughtered al Yerach HaMizbeach Tzofoino, on the north. Pesach is like Shlomim, on any side. So It says, bestir yourselves, you nations of Canaan. Start leaving the land. Vacate and make place, because there's coming a great nation to settle here. Was the greatness of that nation? Or woe is Simon, come, you nation of the south, that has the Korban Pesach. Now, I would never say it myself. And none of us would have the audacity to make such a queer statement. Is that a reason to expel nations and to give Israel the right to take their land? But that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara explains, that's what the Pasuk is saying. The Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which means, you peoples of the earth, your bodies are not sacred. You may have noble attitudes sometimes. Every person is capable of nobility. Everybody has a great soul within him if he utilizes it properly. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has dedicated the bodies of every Yisrael, every Israelite is Kodesh Kodoshim, is a Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is Kodesh Kodoshim. Kol Anogea Bo Yigdosh. It makes sacred anything that comes in contact with it. And whatever you put in the body of Yisrael is Kodesh. That's a remarkable thing. It's extremely difficult even to talk about it. But there it is, black on white. We are commanded to put the Korban Pesach into our mouths and to chew it and swallow it. Because we are now a Mizbeach. That's the meaning of the election of Yisrael. Not we are chosen from the nations. We're not another nation. Mi ki amcho Yisrael goy echad boretz. Who is like a people, Yisrael? One nation in the world? Doesn't mean a chosen nation. It means it's entirely different. Now, as said before a number of times, whether we're ready to accept that or not, but that's Torah, and we have to think into it. And the more we'll appreciate it, the more we'll understand that word Pesach. So now we have some significance that we can derive from this word when we're going to say it Pesach night. The second word is matzah. Pesach matzah umorah. Now it's always good to follow the simple statements of the Torah. I say simple because nothing is simple in the Torah. But it's available, it's open for those statements of the utmost importance. In the Torah it states, that they ate their bread, matzahs, it was leavened, unleavened. And it's explained in the Agodah Shel Pesach, Lo hispik b'tzeikom shel avoseinu lahachmitz, that their dough didn't have the opportunity to sour, to turn leavened. Kigorshu mi Mitzrayim. That's written in the Torah. They were driven out of Mitzrayim. Vegam seido lo osulem. They didn't have a time to prepare. Velo yochlu liyismamea. They couldn't tarry. They weren't able to wait. They were driven out. So when we study significance, the symbolism of matzah, let's understand what the Torah itself says. After all, if Rabban Gamliel says that those who didn't say these three words is not Yetze the Mitzvah, Lo Yotze Yedei Chayvos, it didn't do his duty, so we have to understand these three words. So at least Pesach, we studied a little. Matzah is a symbol of haste, that their dough didn't have the opportunity to leaven. Actually, there's more to it than this plain statement. Because had the commandment to eat matzah followed the going out of Mitzrayim, it means had they gone out of Mitzrayim first, and then they would have been commanded to eat matzah, so we understand that reason. It's a memorial to the occasion when they took all their belongings and they hastily left the country. So their dough didn't have a chance to leaven, and in memory of that, we ate matzah. But the fact is, we were commanded to eat matzahs before we went out of Mitzrayim. There are parshas in the Torah commanding us how to make the first Korban Pesach. And the command was given before we were told to eat matzahs. And they ate matzahs that night. They prepared matzahs. So we see it wasn't merely because they didn't have opportunity to go out, to opportunity to leaven their bread. There's a significance here, a symbolism we have to study. Now, briefly, the matzah comes to tell us a certain lesson. There's no douche. We're not trying to put any symbolism into it. We're trying to take out the symbolism that's there. And the lesson is that there is a time when the action must be taken. There's a time in the history of a nation, later we'll see about the individual too, but there's a time in a national history when quick action must be taken. You know that they were in Egypt 210 years. But there had been a prophecy of 400 years. Something happened. Shehakodesh Baruch Hu chishev es haketz. Hakodesh Baruch Hu made a calculation that the 400 years must be changed into 210 years. Now, how that could be has been explained already here. There is a lecture called Prophecy and Free Will, where it's explained how that works. But the change had to be made for an urgent reason. And the reason was that the Am Yisrael could not remain any longer where they were. Now, the Gemara explains this. That our forefathers are compared to a man who had stepped into a quagmire, into a swamp, and he was sinking. And he was calling for help, and the people were thinking about ways and means of rescuing him or dragging him out of the mud. In the meantime, however, he was sinking more and more deeply. As the mud reached his hips, he urged them to take more speedy action. and they were considering ways and means of dragging him out. Should they put ropes around the armpit, or should they call a horse in order to pull him out? Finally, it was up to his neck. And as he was sinking and the mud reached his mouth, then they saw that he couldn't wait any longer. They had to take immediate decisive action. And that's what happened to our forefathers in Egypt. They were sinking into the Sha'arei Tumah. They were sinking into degrees of uncleanliness. Egypt was a Gentile nation. Whether it was the worst or the best of the nation, I can't tell you. It doesn't make much difference. But it was a Gentile nation. And the Am Yisrael, if they are too long among the Gentiles, something happens to them. And what happens can be fatal, Chalila. A Jew can be so long among the nations that he sinks into the mire until Chas V'Sholem, it's too late. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to take drastic and rapid action. And that's what happened then. Now, you know, Paray had stalled. They repeatedly came to him and requested he should send out the Bnei Israel to freedom. He refused, and then he stalled, he postponed. He was a king, and he took his time to think this over. He never intended to let him out anyhow. Suddenly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he decided that the time is up, you can't wait any longer, because one more week and they're going to be lost forever, his chosen people. So Paro got up in the middle of the night. Paro didn't get up in the middle of the night, not to send people out of slavery, that one thing is sure. He got up in the middle of the night, and he himself came with his officials, came fast on the double quick to Moshe and Aaron, and they said, get out as soon as possible. Ki gorshu, they drove them out. Paro was only doing the bidding of Hashem. He didn't know it. He wanted to save Egypt from complete destruction. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu was pulling the wires behind the scenes, and when the time came, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chishev es ha-keitz, he calculated la'aseis, to do as he promised to Avram in that covenant where he said 400 years. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said 400 years. Now the pshat is not 400 years from the coming into Egypt, but 400 years from the time that Yitzhak was born. HaKadosh Baruch Hu learned that pshat in his nevuah, and immediately, presto, they were driven out of Egypt in a moment before it was too late. And the Torah says that's why we eat matzah, because the dough can only rise to a certain limit. Once it goes beyond that limit, it's chametz. Up till now, it's matzah, and it's a mitzvah. You get rewards for eating it on Pesach. And if you go beyond that, even one moment, a second beyond what matzah can tolerate, and it ferments and becomes chometz in that second, it's koras to eat it on Pesach. And therefore, the symbolism of matzah is action must be taken before it is too late. Now this, we have to know, was not only in Mitzrayim. If it was only at that one time, we should be eternally grateful. Even for one time in our history, we were snatched out of the jaws of oblivion. We could have been lost forever, Cholila. And our Kodesh Baruch would have to go shopping someplace else to find the chosen people. Even for that one time, we are eternally grateful. But there's more to it. It's a lesson that this happens repeatedly. Hashem steps in again and again to rescue his people when he sees them sinking in the mud. in the land of Canaan, when they came in the Eretz Yisrael, for a long time, they were able to remain above the ground. They didn't step into the mud. A time came when they began sinking in the mud. There were nations around them, and they were becoming influenced, even those who dwelt in Eretz Yisrael, and they began sinking, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw it was necessary to rescue them from the defilement, the tumah of the nations around them. And when they were driven out, when they went into exile, it was a hatzolah, it was a salvation, they were saved from destruction. That's the pshat of exile. They were pulled from the mud of their environment where they were sinking. If we read the history as described in the Tanakh, we see how there was a constant struggle to resist the influence of the nations of the land and the peoples around them. There were ups and downs, and finally HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that the struggle was being lost and they were going underground. And so he stretched out the Yad Chazakah, a strong hand, like the Yechezkel HaNavi says, whether you'll accept me as your king or not, Imlo beYad Chazakah Emlech Aleich, I'm going to rule over you with a strong hand, whether you want it or not. You think that in Germany you're going to intermarry and get lost, everybody will speak German, and you'll be nothing but German citizens, and you try to forget that you belong to the Jewish people? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu stretched out his hand. The hand in this case was a Hitler for the Nazis, and he suddenly drove them out of Egypt. The German Jews left Germany. They left it, either they came to America and elsewhere, or they went to the next world, but they left Germany. And we have to realize it was a great salvation. Not like foolish people, unthinking people say, why did Hashem do it? And why didn't he help his people? And so on. The people should have helped themselves by resisting the assimilation, but their reform, intermarriage, the loss of identity, that was the greatest misfortune that could happen to them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu rescued them from this. So whatever he did was a salvation. Even those Jews who lost their lives in the concentration camps can be considered fortunate, because they were saved from a worse fate. Intermarriage is worse than death. Assimilation is worse than death. Much worse. Thousands of times worse. And therefore, it was a matzah. Now, of course, matzah is not as delectable, it's not as delicious as chametz. That's why people leaven their bread. It's more tasty when the dough ferments. Matzah has a flat taste. Of course, we enjoy matzah. It's a change. And besides, we enjoy the mitzvah too. But all year round, we don't eat it. If you do buy matzahs in the grocery store all year round, it's chametz became matzahs, not kosher l'Pesach. It's flat. However, even though it's not as delicious, but it's a mitzvah, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Jews out of Germany, they didn't want to go. They wanted the chametz. They loved Germany. I told you the story once. The German couple, refugees from Hitler, they crossed the border and they settled for a little while in a Lithuanian town. On December the 25th at night, they were listening to a radio broadcast from Berlin, and they heard the music about Holy Night, Silent Night, and they were sitting and weeping tears of homesickness for their beloved Germany. They used to sit and hear these carols in their home in Berlin. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, rather than let you go lost, I know it's not as tasty for you as to remain where you are, you go into the exile. It's a matzah, but it's a salvation. And that happens in every country. When Jews lived in Spain, they were powerful, very wealthy, and they all spoke the language. They had poets of their own who wrote a beautiful Spanish or beautiful Arabic in the Moorish part of Spain. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw they were coming very comfortable and they were sinking in the mire and getting lost. And so what happened? All of a sudden there was an edict of get out. But Yad Chazaka, get out. And they all had to leave. There was an exile from Spain. That's what Nazi is. Before it's too late, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rescues his people. We have to be grateful for that. And don't think he's going to keep quiet. If the Jews in America want to get lost and they gravitate towards far-off places where there are no Jews and they try to forget where they come from, they change their family names. It should sound like English, Anglo-Saxon names. And intermarry or don't marry. And they follow the wicked ways of the worst goyim, not the good goyim. They follow the ways of the bad goyim. Don't think that all the cockroaches in Greenwich Village will be allowed to continue with the homosexuality, their wickedness. All the people in San Francisco, the Jewish mayor, a homosexual capital of America. Don't think Hashem is going to keep quiet. Something is going to happen to America. I hope that the Frum Jews will increase and will be so active they'll be able to pull their brothers out of the mud before it's too late. But if we don't do the job, it'll be done anyhow. But that's a breeze. And Jews will start streaming to Japan. Jews will start settling in Japan. They'll mob the Japanese consulate and stand in line for a visit to Japan. Because they won't be able to remain here any longer. The Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan is getting bigger and bigger in America. It's always going to happen that way. If Jews want to get lost, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't let them get lost. That's what matzah means. Matzah means before it's too late, pull it out. It shouldn't ferment. That's a very important lesson. So now we know what to think when we say Pesach night, matzah. We were driven out of Egypt. We didn't walk out leisurely. We went on a double quick b'chipozem in haste. That's why we ate the Korban Pesach with our shoes on our feet and our belts around our loins. With our staffs in our hand. In some places the Jews at Pesach night, I think in Taman, Yemenite Jews, when they eat the matzah Pesach night, they do that. They put their packs on their back, a symbolic gesture, and they hold their staffs in their hands, and they eat their matzah as people do who are ready for a journey. That's what our forefathers did. And it says, be chippozen, eat in haste. You have no time. Ki gosh, you're being driven out. Paro will run that night to you in the middle of the night. He'll get up. In the middle of the night, Paro will rise out of his royal bed. He won't be lazy. He won't send a messenger. He'll come himself. He'll come running. And say, get out. Kumu tzu metechami, rise and get out of my people fast. He doesn't know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking from his mouth. But he wants to rescue his people. Hashem wants to rescue his chosen people from sinking too deeply into the mud before they go lost in the Mem Tesh Shari Tume. Now there's more significance in the matzah, but we're going to skip the rest because we have other work to do. Just in passing, matzah, you have to know, is also a sign of nobility. Matzahs were what the Kohanim ate in the Korbanos. Korban Mincha was mostly matzah. It's a sign of greatness, but we're going to leave that now, and we're going to the subject of Mora. That's the third element of Pesach. Mora is there. She'onu oichlen al shum ma. Why do we eat this Mora? Mora is because the Egyptians embittered our lives. Now we might think, and we may be justified in thinking, that we recall the Koshi Hashibut, the bitterness of our bondage in Egypt. We speak about the details of what our father suffered in Egypt. In order to be grateful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeemed us from it. The more we understand that our forefathers were subjected to ordeals, to bitterness, to suffering, the greater will appreciate their deliverance from bondage and from the suffering. Naturally, if somebody rescues you from a very dangerous situation, you're more grateful to him. So that's, in a sense, a way of understanding it. Mora zeh, because they embittered our forefathers' lives, and Hashem came and redeemed us. Not a wrong idea. Very important way of looking at mora, but not enough. We have to understand that the mora, the bitterness that our fathers endured in Egypt, was one of the great benefits. That itself, not only the deliverance, the fact that they suffered in Egypt was a very great benefit. A nation that suffered becomes a great nation. Now we're going to stop. In the Gemara we learn that there are various kinds of penalties that the Torah provides. There are four kinds of death penalties. Below that, there is a penalty called malchus. That's flogging. In between, however, there are penalties inflicted not by Beis Din, but in the judgment of heaven. There's Koras and there's Misa B'dei Shemayim. But Beis Din, the Jewish judges could inflict a penalty of flogging. The Gemara says about this penalty, Malkus tachas miso oimedes. Flogging is a substitute for capital punishment. You have to understand that. Malkus tachas miso oimedes. When a man is whipped by Beis Din, this man is being saved from capital punishment, which he certainly deserved. But this is a remission, that the Torah remits his penalty. It's commuted to flogging. Now the Gemara in Makkos brings a pasuk from Mishlei, and Mishlei states that someone is asked, "What are these wounds that you bear?" Man comes out of the place, he's wounded. You can see he has stripes on his face where hands were applied violently. He was slapped. And he said, "What are these?" So he said, "These makis, these blows, asher hu kesi beis mi ahavai. I was smitten in the house of my friends and my lovers. My friends beat me up." Most people wouldn't appreciate such friends. But the Torah tells us there are such friends. I'll give you an example. When a parent gives a good whipping to a child should understand that the father or the mother is his friend. A crown prince of Prussia once called in his old tutor, and he pinned medals on him, and he said, "I am grateful to you no end for all the floggings you administered to me." It's a lost art, a forgotten wisdom today in this country, and the results we have to know are a cause for apprehension. We don't know what can happen. Chas v'shalom, a generation that is brought up without being whipped. When a boy was chastised, he learned how to behave. They beat into his hide wisdom that he couldn't take in through his mind, and it was up to him. In the olden days, they used to kiss the rod. After the father gave him a whipping, the boy was supposed to take the stick and kiss it. I suppose it wasn't so sincere at that time, but the symbolism entered his mind. As he grew older, he appreciated it. It was a benefit for him. It saved his life. How many people lost their lives because they couldn't control themselves? Anything they wanted, they did. You know how many people died young because of narcotics? They don't talk about that. A whole generation went underground in the early 20s of their lives because of narcotics, and their parents gave them the money. There's a whole generation today that's whoring away and making their entrance into Gehenna because their parents are giving them money. It's a yes generation of yielding to the child, and who knows what's going to happen, chas v'shalom, from these people. And we see certain things are happening already, but in the days when humanity still had some common sense, especially the chosen people, it was understandable that the administration of punishment was a great benefit. Now, when a boy goes out of the house and he's married, he looks back and he remembers the blows that his parents gave him. Mother also used to give blows. Mother used to give blows. Mother used to put a boy, a big boy, over her knees, and with a slipper, she gave it to him. Mother did it too. If a boy went to Cheder, the Hebrew school, and came back and told his parents, "The Rebbe hit me," so the parents hit him too. Today they'll run and call up the yeshiva and make a fight with the teacher of the yeshiva, because they're fools. If you went home and told your parent that the Rebbe hit you. Smack, smack. So in those days, when they looked back on their parents' home, they said, "Asher hu kesi beis me ahavai." I was beaten in the house of those who love me. That's love. Because you want to make something out of your boy and out of your girl too. And therefore the Gemara said, when Beis Din decreed on a man he should get malchus, and he gave him a flogging, this man walked out of Beis Din and he was stinging on all sides. They hit him in front and back, and the shamash hit him with whole kreche. It was a prescribed size. You couldn't use just anything. But it was given the whole kreche, all his strength. This man, as he walks out, is expected to repeat the words of Mishle and say, "These are my friends, because they saved me from death." Otherwise, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have given him worse. Malkus tachas miso emeres. The Sforim say that if 210 years were able to substitute for 400 years because of the sufferings. But it's not just a technicality. It's because they were purified. We don't realize how great a benefit affliction is. An afflicted people can become a noble people. Of course, it depends. If you afflict savages, cannibals, it also is a benefit. Gemara compares it to a certain quality of flax. There's a certain cheap flax that you have to pound. You pound flax in order to make it whiter. But you can only pound it to a certain extent. After that, the flax breaks. It's a cheap quality flax. A good quality flax, Chazal say, you can hit it no end. And the more you hit it, the more supple it becomes and the whiter it becomes. And the Am Yisrael is the best quality. And therefore, we have to realize what happened. In Mitzrayim, they became the very best because of their sufferings. Egypt is called a number of times in the Tanakh, Kur HaBarzel, the iron furnace. Do you know what the iron furnace is used for? In Mishle it says, "Matzleif la kesef, bekur la zoho." If you want to purify silver, there's a matzleif. If you want to refine gold, use a kur. Gold is refined in an iron furnace. It's a furnace made of iron with a high temperature, and there you melt the gold. As the impurities rise to the top, you ladle it off. It becomes pure gold. And our forefathers became pure gold because of the sufferings in Egypt. We have no idea how noble they became because of their tribulations. They became sympathetic. They had compassion on people. A nation that went through the mill learned how to have pity. Ki atem yadatem nefesh ager. You know what it was to be a ger. The third says, you got that benefit in Egypt. Ki avodim yisem beretz Mitzrayim. You were slaves. You know what it means to be a slave. The man that went through the hospital has a certain compassion. He feels the necessity for bika felim. And therefore, our nation gained no end of nobility. Moror Zeshon, we'll be grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gave us 20 of bitter herbs in Israel. The Egyptians did their best. And it was all Chesed Hashem. That's how to understand the real meaning of the Moror. And in 210 years, it wasn't 210 years because Yosef HaTzadik, he came to power at the age of 30. He passed away at the age of 110. The Bnei Yisrael. So therefore, the first 80 years were good years in Mitzrayim, because it was under the rule of Yosef. Moshe Rabbeinu was 80 years old when he took us out of Egypt. So out of the 210 years, if you subtract the 80 years of Moshe Rabbeinu and the years that Yosef had tzaddik, the Shibud, when they started killing Jewish children, was when Moshe Rabbeinu was born. That is only 80 years, the last 80 years it started. So it wasn't 210 years of suffering. However, whatever it was such a potent medicine, it accomplished such a purification of the Am Hashem, that it was equivalent to 400 years of bondage. And they left Mitzrayim a pure gold nation. And therefore, when we say Pesach night, these three things, we can sum up that there are three reasons of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, we have to reconsider the whole subject now from the beginning in a different light. And most people never consider it in this sense. Now, I have seen chashuvim, important people, who did understand this in a different sense. The Gemara says, when it happened that a Jew died, and it was a question, how many people are obligated to attend his funeral? Who cares? The Maisa today is a different story. We live in big cities, but in those days it was a question, how many should come to his funeral? In those days the entire town went to the funeral. They stopped learning Torah, Mevatlan, Talmud, Torah, so SMS, everybody went to the funeral. That's how it used to be. So the question was, how many do you need to give, to accord proper honor to somebody that passed away? So the Gemara says 600,000 are enough. You need 600,000 people to attend a man's funeral, a Jew's funeral. Where do we learn 600,000? Because of Matan Torah, with 600,000 Jews present at the giving of the Torah. So when a Jew passes away, it's like taking away the Torah. Isn't that a queer argument? Nitziloso kinesinos. Have to study this. It's an important subject. Nitziloso, the taking away of the Torah when a Jew dies, kinesinoso, like giving the Torah. Just like giving the Torah requires 600,000. So taking away the Torah when a Jew passes away, the Torah is finished. There's no more Torah on a dead Jew. B'meisim chavshi, when he's dead, he's finished with the Torah. In the next world, he doesn't have to keep the Torah. Next world is reward, but no mitzvahs, no Torah. So just like the giving of the Torah, 600,000 Jews. So when the Torah is being taken away, when a Jew dies, 600,000 people should come. Now the giving of the Torah was a national event. When a Jew died, it was just an individual event. But we see from this that the sages equate our history with the history of the individual. It means every Jew, when he stood and received the Torah, It was his individual historic turning point in his life. He received the Torah. I have to explain this a little more. It means all the great events of our history, although they are important and they are of national significance, as was partially explained up till now, all of them, however, symbolize our private individual lives. And we have to take these great lessons and try to apply them to ourselves individually. As a Mishnah, Masechta Sanhedrin, the Mishnah asks, why is it that all the creatures of the world were created in great numbers? When Hashem wanted to create deer, he didn't make one pair, a male and a female, and they produced all the deer in the world? No. He made herds of deer suddenly were created, yesh me'ayin, all over the world. He didn't make one pair of birds that produced all the other birds. Everything was produced in abundance from the beginning. So why is it that mankind came only from one couple? That's a queer thing. Why didn't he make, at the very beginning, the world should be peopled by various groups of people all over? And the Mishnah says as follows, a most significant statement. Lefikach nivra adam yachidi, this is why a man was created all alone. Kedei sheyemar kol echad ve'echad bishvili nivra ho'olam, in order that every individual, each person should say, for me alone the world was created. That's how to look at the world. It doesn't mean that you're selfish. It doesn't mean that you disregard everyone else. No, you have to continue the national and the universal aspect of all things. But you have to realize whatever is in the world is for you. The ultimate Slabodka, the Chenelach used to say, Hashem created a son just for you. S-U-N. And although there's so many people in the world, and each one will say, the sun isn't for me, it's for all the rest of them. So therefore, each person has no sun, and is not grateful, is not indebted. No, you're indebted for a sun. And each one of us. So the question is, do we have to thank for the sun? If you take my share, it's a small part. Everybody else enjoys the sun. No, it's your sun. And you have to act as if the sun was made for you. Now that takes time to explain, and we're not going to go into any arguments about it now. But that's the attitude. Everything in nature and everything in history has to be regarded from our individual viewpoint. And therefore, Chayev Odom Lirois Es Atzmei Kiluhu Yotzami Mitzrayim. Now I'm not going to change the meaning. Man should regard himself as if he went out of Egypt, personally. However, without changing the meaning of that maima, we have to understand that all these things, Pesach, Matzah, and Morah, we have to learn what they mean for us individually, not only nationally. I'll just cite the Malbim on Shir HaShir. The Malbim begins his Peros HaShir HaShir with the following explanation. Shir HaShir, we know, is an expression of the Jewish people, the way they talk to Hashem, and the way Hashem talks to them. The young woman, Shir HaShir, speaks for the Jewish people. The young man speaks for Hashem. And that's how it's understood usually. Most of the Mefarshim talk in that sense. The Malbim, however, even though he also explains in that sense, it's an important point, unusual attitude. The Malbim explains Shir HaShir also as the yearning of the individual soul to Hashem. And the young woman is our soul, the Neshama. And Yishokeinim in Ishikas Piyu. Not only the Jewish nation is longing once more to be reunited with the Shekhinah, as it was at Har Sinai when they heard that grand voice, and everyone swooned in the happiness, in the delirium and ecstasy of seeing the Shekhinah. No, not enough. Each person, all his life, says Ashir Ashirim, and he longs to come close to Hashem. And that's how he explains the entire Sefer Ashir Ashirim. Bikashti al mishkovi ba'leilois, on my couch in the nights, Bikashti eishe ohav onafshi, I sought him whom my soul loves. The Rambam explains, when you're lying in bed at night, sometimes you wake in the middle of the night. So instead of just turning in bed for nothing, think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why he woke you that night. Think about him. Good opportunity. It's quiet all around. You're alone. Al mishkavi ba'leilos, on my bed during the night, Bikashti, I seek him whom my soul loves. That's the one we love most. Think about him. Maybe you'll fall asleep in a minute, but it'll be an experience. Just think. Once, 20 years ago, you woke in your sleep and you couldn't fall asleep again for a while, so you said, I'll be mekayim with the Rambam says, al mishkavi ba'leilos, I'll seek Hashem, and Hashem comes in your thoughts and you think about him, and it's not so interesting, you think you'll fall asleep. That's all right. Even that attempt, that moment that you thought about it, is a big achievement. So we see that these great ideas are applied to the individual. So now we'll come back to Pesach Matzah and Moreh, and Pesach night you can think about it as applied to individuals. We have full license to do it. I heard great men speak that way. Pesach. Look back. Don't you remember there are people your age that didn't make it, and you're here alive today? The destroyer didn't pass over them. Look back. Don't you recall? I can recall. When I was 14, what happened to boys? They didn't make it beyond 14. When I was 20, I looked back, others didn't make it. Some landed up in the insane asylum and never got out again. Some were ruined. I looked back. As I went on, people fell by the wayside, and I kept on going. Each one of us, if we'll think back, you'll see the same story. Look how many people of your generation didn't make it to where you are. And spiritually, look how many people fell by the wayside. How many of your friends? You were in high school once. What happened to them? It's like a beachhead, on the Anzio beachhead, when the Allies decided to make a landing. So the enemy was shooting down our soldiers on all sides. 1 out of 10 was able to remain. The rest didn't make it. They fell. Look back, how many boys, how many girls went lost, were assimilated. What happened to them? Your relatives. What happened to them? Sometimes brothers and sisters. What happened to them? Here you are. Atem adreikim Hashem elekeihem chayim kukam asepesah. The destroyer didn't pass into your home. You're here. Some of us can boast. We have beautiful homes. Look at the homes of our brothers, homes of our cousins. Many of us have skeletons in the closets. And sometimes we try to act like they don't exist. But Baruch Hashem, we're here. It's a Pesach, it's a deliverance. That's how we have to learn Pesach also. Kilu yotza mimitzrayim, you went out, you redeemed. We were redeemed from Egypt. Each one of us too, but we're redeemed in our own lives. And Pesach is a good time to remind yourself about this. And also the second significance. What happened to us? Look how we made progress in life. We have been hallowed, we sanctified, we learned Torah, we learned to practice mitzvahs, we learned emunah, we gained Torah attitudes. Don't think it's a small thing. You think you're doing a favor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you became a Baal Tshuva, or you're a from Yeshiva man. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed that favor on you. You have to be grateful for it. You're niskadesh. You're a different body. You're not the same person at all. And we owe a great debt of thanks to Hashem. Pesach! That's what Pesach means. It means more than that. And matzah. Matzah means you can't waste any more time. Who knows when we'll cross the boundary? It might be a little too late. As soon as possible, Gilse de Yam Kiselay Mishtak, which Eleni and your youth can be forgotten. But where, how long will the youth continue? So let's say you start at the young age of 75. It's better than 76. But shake a leg. You can't postpone any longer. There are a lot of good midas, like a certain Adam Choshe said recently. A lot of good midas. Now you're pretty old. Why don't you start thinking of being ambitious and getting these big milas? All your life you're thinking, someday, someday. When will you start working on them? Milas! Greatness of character, greatness of Taas, greatness of Torah, greatness of all the things. Hurry up! And you should get it as soon as possible. There comes a time when it's too late in everybody's life. Sometimes certain stages are too late. Let's say if a man is in a yeshiva, he's not utilizing it well. What is he going to become great in Torah after he leaves the yeshiva? If a person is just married and is thinking of making a successful Jewish family, when will you do it? She's spacing her children, and she'll have children maybe when she's 60 years old. So now is the time to build up a family while you're still fruitful and be ambitious about it. There'll be a time when you've crossed the border, you can't come back anymore. Too late to have children. Or too late to get married. What are you waiting for? You'll pass a certain stage when you'll never be able to get a fruitful wife anymore. You'll have to pick a bride from the old age home. So you better hurry up. And once you pass the boundary, it's too late. There are a lot of boundaries in life. And of course, there's a boundary when a person already is old and is broken physically, has no more ambition, and his hand totters. He can hardly hold a cane. Is that the time to be ambitious and start accomplishing things in life for yourself? So while you're still with your keches, now is the time. That's what Matzah says. Mitzvah abor liyotcho al tach mitzeno. These mitzvahs that come to you, and don't start postponing them. Hurry up and snatch the mitzvah before it turns sour at leavens and it's too late. And morah. Morah means in our individual lives, we should look back and appreciate the hard times that we had. Everybody has some hard times in life. Look back and understand what good fortune you had in these hard times. The truth is, most of the hard times weren't hard times at all. You're complaining for nothing. But let's say they were hard times. You have to realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu was purifying you. If you look back, sometime you'll see your best accomplishments were in the hard times. The many successful rabbis today have a lot of money in the bank, and they eat well, and they weigh a lot on the scales. If you look back when they were poor yeshiva boys, they lived with starvation, almost starvation. But that's when they were alive. They were learning Torah, full of idealism. They went in rags in the yeshiva, but their hearts were aflame with idealism. And then they made their biggest achievements, the biggest strides they accomplished then, because poverty is a blessing for the idealist. Wealth is a very great peril. Wealth is a ruination of most people. It needs a very big man to be able to utilize wealth properly. And so we look back on our lean years and we see the morah. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he gave us this morah in our lives, and now we understand what a great boon it was, those years when he afflicted us, so to speak. Really, it was not affliction either, just a form of affliction. Those were the years of our greatest success. That's how we should utilize Pesach on a national scale and on an individual scale. We should understand everything of our history is really a symbol for us. If we study our history, we can apply it to our own lives and understand that it's a symbol for us. We have to live the history of our people in our individual careers, and the end will come like it will come to our nation at the end, the great Achris Hayomim, and so will the final success come to us too. Of course, the more we prepare for it, the greater the end will be successful.
מגוון שיעורי כל הלשון נמסרים על ידי מגדי שיעורים ורבנים המשקיעים מזמנם וכוחם ללמד לרבים. אם ברצונכם וביכולתכם לסייע ולתמוך במגדי השיעורים ובמוסדות התורה שבאחריותם, תוכלו ליצור קשר ישיר עם הרבנים. לקבלת פרטי מגדי השיעורים ניתן לפנות למשרדי כל הלשון בטלפון 02-581-6622 או בכתובת דואר אלקטרוני lstrudel@hl.com